So welcome to month four Investable ETR briefing. And the one that we're presenting today covers the trading period for the 1st of April to the 30th of April. Last month during the briefing, I was delighted to see, or hear rather, Paul Isdell interrupt the call and ask why for the last number of months I was talking about shipping as part of the briefing, and why it was relevant, never mind important. So I'd like to return to this point again, because our job here is pretty simple, or so it appears anyway, when in fact it's anything but simple, particularly in the circumstances we find ourselves in over the past year and more. So our job is to make money for investors, obviously, and to use it to buy the best and most secure exchange-traded receivables that we can. So you want the investor's principal and interest to be safer and better than any cash equivalent fixed income alternative in the market. So it isn't particularly hard to beat the negative deposit rates on offer from banks, but it is difficult to make sure that the ETO we're buying are reliable, perform as they should, and provide the yields and investors demand. So how do you do that in a local or indigenous market that we call Ireland and the UK? When, as you saw back in November, two-thirds of our originator market were suffering an average of a 45% reduction in income. The answer then and now is simply you don't. If you stand back from the indigenous market, you hold your funds, as we did for the first quarter of the year, and you make sure that you find the right market to sustain the returns your investors need without increasing the risk, and preferably reducing it. So that forces us to be innovative whilst also being pragmatic, and cautious whilst also being creative before getting to the point of being certain of what we're doing and then executing. So international trade is not new to credit exchange. We've been trading internationally since 2019, not only in investable ETR contracts and receivables, but also in leasable assets too. As you'll hear later in this presentation, if you're experienced in trading across borders and doing so with ever increasing success, underpinned with the better confidence, and at the same time, you've similar experiences in financing unusual assets like large plant and machinery costing millions of euros or pounds, the natural progression is to marry the trade and the asset positions and find some commonality. So the dominant form of international trade is in commodities, consumables, and finished goods. So these trade assets originate the investable ETR, and 90% of those goods underlying these ETR are moved from one country to another on an unusual asset that happens to be called a ship. So that is why the primary focus of the credit group of companies is on trade and now shipping. So this is a vast market, which, according to the WTO, is valued at more than 25 trillion per annum, of which trade assets and receivables in that are 4 to 1 that of services. So in other words, 19 trillion of that is where hard assets that for the main part are transported by ships. Moving on to that in a little bit more detail, the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, UNCTAD, shows that over the past 15 years, any time there's been a negative trend in global trade, it has been completely reversed within 12 months of its occurrence. So, for example, there was a negative trade trend of 20% back in 2009, and in 2010, world trade rebounded by 30%. In 2015 and part of 2016, it was negative 10, and the rebound 2017-18 was plus 10. So unsurprisingly, in 2020, it was negative circa 8%. And already in 2021, we've recovered 9%, and that's only up to the end of April. So in fact, if you look at the WTO analysis, it shows the trade actually shrank by more than 14% in quarter two of last year, but had all but recovered by quarter three and was completely to the positive by year end. So looking at our indigenous market, and you remember from private prior briefings, I should say, I told you that locally these markets were off by 40% and expecting several years before they recover. Meanwhile, your investors demand reliable returns. If we continued to look at our indigenous market, the tenor of this briefing would be pretty grim. But because we take our job seriously here, we decreased our writing of ETR locally and focused on international trade. So good for us, good for you, and most of all, good for your investors. So like I said, more on this later. But for now, let's focus on the actual April numbers and opening the briefing itself. Actually, before doing that, I'd like to thank Paul for his question last month and encourage anyone on this meeting to pose questions as they come to mind, because your questions are important and should be addressed in this open forum. That way we can learn from what your concerns are and focus how or if what we're doing addresses those concerns. So again, thanks, Paul. As the briefing document explains, exchange traded receivables are leases, monetary obligations are bills issued under contracts for assets, goods and services supplied to investment quality companies, or credit insured invoices from investment grade insurers. What this means is that an ETR is evidence of a debt owing from one company to another. Typically, these tend to be large companies or banks that are household names, and they owe money to their smaller micro to medium-sized suppliers. We call those micro to medium-sized suppliers businesses originators, because they originate the debt obligation transactions that create the ETR that are ultimately traded on the exchange. So the ETR is evidence of the large company's liability to pay the smaller one, and credit exchange by these ETR at a nominal discount to their face value. In so doing, when the ETRs are settled or paid in full, the difference between the face value that it settles at and the discounted price that it was purchased at creates a margin. And that's the margin that creates the yield or return for investors. So credit exchange also provides other credit facilities to other types of transactions like trade finance or the asset finance that I was talking about earlier. Essentially, they work on the same principles that the traded ETR is a business transaction. The exchange provides the liquidity and is paid a commission for doing so, much in the same way as a bank charges interest. As the briefing document states, at the end of April, credit exchange held active RSA of 17.64 million. As you all know, RSA stands for Revolving Sale Agreement. And a revolving sale agreement is a document or contract between the micro to medium-sized business, or the originator, and credit exchange. So the revolving sale agreement is a commitment by the originator to sell a certain value of ETR to the exchange in any given period. Typically, it's 1 year. So, for example, let's say you have an originator that needs a revolving credit facility of 250,000 in order to run their business. They'll come to the exchange, much like they would go to a bank, and they apply for that credit facility. If we agree to offer it to them on the 250,000 to them on a revolving basis, let's say every 60 days, then they have to agree to sell us 250,000 worth of ETR every 60 days, and the revolving sale agreement, or RSA, will be for a total of 1.5 million worth of ETR over a 12-month period. This commitment to sell the 1.5 of ETR annually to the exchange is documented in the RSA that is submitted to credit exchange, or more correctly, through Andrew. As stated, at the end of April, credit exchange held 17.64 million of these active RSAs. Active RSA contracts continue to remain short, as trading patterns, speed of settlement, and the shortening of the cash-to-cash life cycle increases with the more prevalent use of letters of credits, or LCs, in our business. Trade finance in its purest form, supporting commodity trades and shipping-related transactions, is now a core activity on the trade desk. As we look like we're pulling out of the slow start to the year and going back to resuming the pace that we were at last year. I did mention last month the significant increase in leasable assets over the course of last year. There's been a marginal increase in those assets since December, but indications from shipping is that the careful investigation of this market last year and our entry into it in the fourth quarter of last year is about to pay dividends. Shipping is a volatile market and it is also unique. So despite the fact that March was our sixth month operating in that market, we declined to trade more than 30 opportunities simply because we didn't like them. As of March, we remained on the sidelines waiting patiently for the correct opportunities. And literally on April 1st, the doors opened and some of the best traded opportunities we've seen in our history started to appear. Most notably, although shipping was the conduit, it wasn't the asset. What I mean by that is we found an open market based on shipping and the movement of goods and commodities that was starving for trade finance in considerable amounts in both in terms of volume and indeed value. So in May, you'll see we've acquired some shipping assets, but in April, our focus and our income came from trade finance only. On that, just for those of you that aren't clear on what exactly trade finance is, it is a financial product, in our case, ETR, that is used by companies to facilitate international trade between companies in different countries. Last month, I spoke of the Baltic Index breaking the 3,000 mark this year, and it did on April 30th. Currently, at lunchtime today, it was back at 2688. I also spoke about our monitoring the future freight agreements, or FFA markets. And again, as explained last month, these are derivative financial future trades that predict cargo transport prices ahead of time, and they're a strong indicator of trade flow in general. So as volumes continue to rise in that sector, they're indicative of a market that's predicting strong short-term growth as congestion and supply chains start to ease as trade returns to normal, whatever normal is, meaning that all that pent-up trade and production flow that's been stuck in the market is now pushing back into it, and therefore the demands on shipping will be sustained in the near to midterm. As stated earlier, our cautious optimism from March proved correct as trade opened up literally on, as I said, the first day of April. And as with March, we hadn't made any significant asset trades and the leasable assets remained only slightly above those of year-end 2020. As this briefing is about April's trades, the sharp upturn to the positive continued into April. And as we can see in the middle of the briefing document under performance, we have all but recovered our position and results at the end of April mirrored those of April 2020. So April continued to confirm our trading style was in sync with the market. Let's look at where we are in terms of trade and shipping and start by looking at inflation. For the main part, as mentioned at last month's briefing, the Federal Reserve and closer to home, the Bank of England, are both set to let inflation climb over 2% this year. Nothing too dramatic in that rise until you consider what this means to originators. So indigenous originators are either looking at a 50-50 chance of survival, or they're going to be planning a slow and cautious recovery. Government-backed lending schemes seem to have come and gone, and the EU's shot-in-the-arm package of $750 billion seems mostly consumed at this stage. There doesn't appear to be any more stimulus packages being discussed, or certainly I'm not aware of any. So these companies are in survival mode, both here at home and further afield. Meanwhile, inflation means that raw materials are going to rise by an average of 2% at a minimum. So similarly, freight futures look to be sustaining high levels that haven't been seen in more than 10 years. Broken reports show extraordinary container charter fixtures that are filtering out in reports that they say are unprecedented in the nearly 70 years history of containerization. You've got oil prices also set to rise. Corn prices have doubled in the past few months. Steel prices are breaking levels not seen since 2008. And the European Central Bank, the ECB, along with the UK and the US, think that letting inflation rise is a good thing. I would suggest that they should look at the fundamentals of industry as opposed to thinking about financial markets and taxation. Ireland and England, UK I should say, are island economies with most of the major commodities, oil, steel, corn, all on the rise. We have to factor in the cost of the increasing imports too. It's not reasonable to say 2% is really going to pan out. It's not unreasonable, I should say, to say that 2% is going to pan out for us at closer to 5, maybe even 6%. And that increase on an already depressed market means that the recovery, if it happens or when it happens, is going to be now much slower. So already during the week on the news, RT News that is, it led with a story about the costs in construction increasing significantly. So the effect of this is already being felt on the ground. And the impact is as real, I suppose, as it is concerning. So this is the primary reason why we're not looking at trade heavily in our local market. We'll continue to focus on those increasing costs for transport. And for us, that means shipping and commodities where, like grain prices, the increased cost means that shipping relative to the commodity cost is not receiving the attention it used to. So dollars per ton versus dollars per day aren't really understood by the commodity traders anyway. So with escalating shipping costs following sharp increases in the commodities themselves, fixing a vessel to complete the trade and move on to the next one means that shipping is seeing strong margins that should hold for the remainder of this year and probably most, if not all, of next year. So my predictions on the Baltic Index breaking 3,000 and holding is faltering a little bit. But we are expecting this year, the remainder of this year on into next year, will be strong in those international markets. So distilling that into simple terms, if, as the advertisement on televisions recommend that we shop local, I'm afraid that we'll go to that shop and it may not be there anymore. So our growth in trade finance for 2021, 2022 and beyond has to be on international trade, because that's what your investors demand. Interestingly, in April, Michael Burry, the investor famed for his reading of the financial crisis in 2008, and indeed his notoriety popularized by the film The Big Short, shares our sentiment, and he entered the shipping market in April as well. So interesting that he and we were researching the same market for the better part of last year before committing to it as we have this year. Returning to the briefing, it states that there was 23.93 million fully allocated, and this is a pretty much similar figure to February and March. What this fully allocated figure means is the exchange held 23.93 million worth of ETR on the 30th of April. This means that there was 23.93 million of investors' funds in the market on the last day of April. And if you add that number to the 17.64 of RSA, or revolving sale agreements, that that represents future orders that we have on our books that have not yet been filled, that totals a figure of around about 40 million or slightly more. Moving on to the next figure, April's briefing shows that investors redeemed 410,000 euro. And this is pretty consistent with prior years. The ratio of money in versus money out in March was inverted, but it remains, it reverted, but it still remains off its norm of 2-to-1, where more funds come into the exchange than leave. In April, the ratio was 3-to-2, so the inversion was rectified, but has a way to go yet if it's to return to normal. These investors' funds are a mixture of private companies, as you may know, using ETR as a safe haven for their cash, and an even split then of pension funds in the form of ARF, PRB and PRSAs, combined with private investors' cash savings. The current economic and social crisis remains good for investable ETR, with continued liquidity and stability in our market as we enter the as we head towards the third quarter of the year. And this then brings the focus of the briefing to the ETR average duration of 90 days. And this number, as you know, is what we call the credit index. It is the ETR average duration or number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled. So the number is returned back to a stable or a more stable 90-day mark from the year end 2020 on into January. That's the number that it was at. The exchange's average current credit index is 75, and what we're seeing is a considerable move back towards that number, moving from 121 in March to what we now see as 90 days. The credit index, as explained, is the cash-to-cash cycle from the day an ETR is issued and purchased, and the number of days it takes for the debt to be extinguished or settled and the cash returned. So at 90 days, it's going in the right direction, but it's still 20% higher than it should be. The credit index is an economic indicator that are on our market and the one that we are trading, and appears to be moving out of depression, thankfully. Looking at April's ETR briefing, there's the trading result then for 13.16 million in the month. And this is a medium result for the year, but considerably higher than the same month last year. Had we not had such a poor quarter one, there'd be some room for a celebration, but that's not the case. Quarter one was a little bit nerve-wracking, and thankfully in the past, we're trading well and making up lost ground, but we're still a ways off the year's budget and target. So below last month's trading figure of 13.16 is the treasury performance of 11.69 million. This means that we spent more than 13 million and collected 11.7. Trade and treasury being aligned is good. It means that there's an even balance between the funds going out to purchase new ETR and the settlements coming back as Treasury does its work. So Trade Desk and Treasury are keeping good pace on each other. Moving to the center of the document, this is where we list the 10 largest ETR holdings and the top 10 rated holdings. These two lists show what companies or organizations owed the exchange the largest amounts of money as at 30th of April 2021. And as usual, you can see the HSE continues to hold their slot, as they have done now for over a year. Huawei did not make the list this month for the first time in more than a year. We can see the repeated appearances of companies like Atradius, Vodafone and Cork City Council. Musgrave's and Total Produce make a return, as does GH, Let, PRM and others. Moving to the top rated investable ETR on the right hand side, there's the regular reappearance of MediaMath, Paramount 21 and others. These are the highest rated debtors, and as none of these were investment grade or have an investment grade rating at the end of April, this list shows a random selection of organizations regardless of the amount of their liability, and is simply a selection of the most credit worthy. Moving to the pie chart below that, demonstrates a significant change in the typically well-diversified spread of ETR across the market. The HSE here in Ireland and the NHS in the UK, along with others in the health and community, remained stable at 16.79 in April. So since quarter two of last year, this pie chart has repeated heavy exposure to the wholesale retail market. And as per prior statements throughout last year's briefings, this is more wholesale and food retail. As you may well know, organizations like Tesco, Musgrave and others make regular appearance on our top 10 largest holdings. And looking to the wholesale trade, this continues to perform well and has remained between 35% and 40% for the past 12 months now. So food and beverage held steady at about 7% mark, and both manufacturing and the business and services sector also holding steady at between 8% and 10%. So the more than 50% decline in construction that we saw earlier in the year is remaining at 7% in March and repeats that in April. And apart from that, no other significant changes in that chart month on month. It's still that chart still references the EU NACE categorization system. Suffice to say, this is the fifth year of the development of our new software. It's not been without its delays, but H2 of this year should see it completed, where we'll then switch to using our own credit classification for industries. Returning to the actual performance of the exchange in April 2020 versus April 2021, you can see very strong doubling in trading value and volume. And as stated earlier, the total amount of investor withdrawals was 0.41 million. I've also discussed the credit index being at 90. And to finish up on the performance in April, the largest single trade was a trade finance deal for 1.21 million. As explained in the investable brochure and also at other briefings, the average value of an ETR is circa €2,000, but we have traded ETR where the value has been less than €1. And as you can see here, last month, the largest one was 1.21 million. Moving to the trends section of the April briefing, the investor's yield, our buy price during April, started at 1.766 and ended over 2%. So with the negative 1% yield on bank deposits, investors are getting a yield that is now over 3% better by using exchange-traded receivables as their on-demand cash equivalent. As you all know, this rate changes daily, and you can check at any time on the investable.com website. We discussed last month that we'd artificially prop this price up and push the yield to more than 2% as part of a drive to bring more funds into the exchange. Unfortunately, last month's briefing was very low attendance, and I'm not sure the message got out to the wider investor community as much as we would have hoped. Or certainly, the inbound investor receipts were well short of the 10 million target we set ourselves. So we're going to hold that rate until the end of June, along with continuing the 1% intermediary commission. And Andrew has been asked to ensure that he contacts all of our intermediaries to make sure they're aware of this new offering. So to finish the briefing, you will see a repeat of the active RSA, a revolving sale agreement of €17.64 million. And that concludes the month's briefing for April 2021. Thank you very much.